Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Forbes magazine has released its 30 under 30 lists, including a look at innovators in education. Making that list, Rapid City native Emily Grassley. She's the creator and host of Brain Scoop on YouTube. Her educational videos highlighting the research and collections work of natural history museums have been viewed more than 21.5 million times. She is the chief curiosity correspondent with the Field Museum of Natural History in Chicago. She joins us on the phone now from Chicago. Emily, welcome to In the Moment.
Hi, Lori. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. So your initial thoughts about making this list. There's some good company on there for you.
Yeah, it's a little intimidating, to be honest. I always kind of thought of Forbes as, that the business magazine. But I was really appreciative that they're thinking kind of outside the box when it comes to education and different educational approaches. So I got to notice that I was a finalist, and I tried to not tell too many people. And then when the list came out, I actually found out through social media before I found out from Forbes. So. It's really an honor.
Yeah, another sign of the times that you know that it was leaked on social media first. So we
right.
talk education, and one of the things that kind of came up right away with this list is people were pointing out, you know, these aren't classroom teachers that we're talking about here. These are people like yourself who have a different format for education. What do you think that says, you know, not only about the list but about what's happening in education today?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And I did also notice that there wasn't a single classroom teacher on there. And to that degree, I would disagree with the list because there's a lot that I can do as a digital educator, you know, and there's a lot to be said about being able to reach people where they are all across the world. But, you know, nothing I do is ever going to replace the in-classroom experience that children get from their classroom teachers. And, you know, my sister is a fourth grade teacher in Minnesota, and I think she has the hardest job in the world. But so to that degree, I wish they would have specified, you know, teachers in tech or something. But I mean, that being said, we are able to reach learners from all over the world. And I think that's pretty remarkable use of digital technology, that people are looking at how people use social media and saying, you know, I think I can adapt this to an educational environment. And that's certainly something that we've been able to do with the Brain Scoop. For everybody who can't make it to Chicago or to the Field Museum, we understand that there are, you know, limitations and not everybody can make it out there. And so we make these videos so people can have a greater appreciation for the sort of work that happens behind the scenes.
Give us a little idea of what it was like to grow up in Rapid City, and now that you look back at where you're currently at, and look backwards, do you see signs of, yeah, that makes sense that I would end up at the Field Museum?
Sort of. So, you know, my grandfather and great-grandfather, my father, were all ranchers out near Faith. And growing up, my grandfather especially had a supreme fondness for the fossils that he would find out on his ranch. And then when Sue, of course, the T-Rex was unearthed, that was a story that my family and I followed pretty closely, mostly because it was just so close to home, right? It was literally like
right.
5 miles away from where my grandfather and father have their ranches. So I grew up with an appreciation for, you know, fossils and for the natural world. We're a very outdoors family. And then there were other things, you know, like my sister and I used to catalog our Beanie Babies. You know, like
right?
Any kid, you have all these Beanie Babies. And so we were assigning numbers to them and creating a collection and sort of curating this. So there are things that I remember like that where in hindsight I'm like, oh, yeah, that does kind of make sense. But I think the most important thing was just that exposure to the natural world that we had growing up. And something that I really miss about living in Chicago now is, you know, I can't just wander mm-hmm. out in my backyard and see a bobcat.
Right. Because curating and labeling and cataloging your stuffed animals is, I wouldn't say it's not normal. I would just say that maybe not every kid interacts with their toys in that same way.
It's,
is that
it's
safe
kind of
to say?
Level.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is a little next level.
I'll be the first to admit I was a weird kid, so that's okay.
What else do you take with you from South Dakota that you find you know, kind of really informs your work in Chicago?
That's a great question. You know, growing up, I don't know that I really appreciated how much natural wonder there is in the state. Growing up, you kind of like look at what's happening on either coast, and especially as a teenager, a little bit envious that you're not in it, right? That the right. biggest names and concerts, you know, like I could never see my favorite bands. They would never tour in South Dakota. And now that I live in Chicago, honestly, it's the opposite. I don't care to go out and see my favorite
right.
band.
Yeah.
I would much rather go on a hike or go visit a national park. And so that's been really challenging, but a unique challenge in helping people in Chicago understand that even though we don't have as immediate access to the natural world, there are still ways that we can interact with it and kind of recalibrate our thinking to understand that nature is still all around us, right? So I have a camera, motion sensor camera in my backyard, and it'll capture like the skunks and the possums that are wandering and the raccoons that are getting into my garbage. And it's just a different sort of wildlife appreciation now that it's far more urbanized.
So when you make a video for Brain Scoop and you're really planning an episode, are you thinking, you know, this is going to be watched by 5-year-olds who are really geeked out and by college students who are really geeked out and excited about science, kids in New York City or an urban environment, kids around the world, and then kids who live in Rapid City and, or, you know, or Faith or on a ranch and spend their whole day outside? How do you sort of create an episode that is going to find an audience in all those places like you have?
Well, that's one of our biggest challenges and one of the reasons why we've actually continued to make so many videos. So we, in the last 5 years, we've made close to 180 educational videos because there are so many different topics to cover that appeal to so many different people with so many different academic backgrounds or levels of learning. And so we really try to take these themes of appreciating the natural world and being curious about the world around us and adapt them to sort of cater to different audiences. And the interesting thing is that when we've done more like Illinois or Chicago-centric videos, they tend to not perform as well because almost half of our audience lives outside of the United States. So
wow.
we have to keep it as broad as possible while still making these themes engaging. And one of the most recent things that we've done is I do a monthly program where I prepare a specimen for our research collection in a public space. And in this last case, we ended up live streaming it to our YouTube channel, and I was preparing a North American beaver. And what was really interesting is that even though this live stream was 3.5 hours long, some of the people who tuned in for the longest were from Bermuda and Malawi and Africa, people who were just watching for hours and hours. And it was amazing to me because you're taking a relatively common animal that's found all across the United States that we perhaps take for granted, and yet you're showing it to people all over the world who maybe have never seen anything like this before, you know, the second largest rodent in the world. And so that was really interesting to see the feedback and hear from people, not just in the United States, but from all across the world who are engaging in this content and finding a new and novel approach to it.
From a personal perspective, is there a moment where your mind trips a little bit and you're doing the work and you're thinking, people are watching this in Bermuda right now, and they're interested enough to stick with it? I mean, is that something that you sort of can only process after something is taken flight, or is it something that when you're doing it, you have an awareness of how influential this is?
It actually happens before. So I tend to not, you know, I get so caught up in just planning the logistics, like making sure, okay, the cameras are ready and the audio sounds good. And, you know, we have our informational flyers and I put the frequently asked questions in the video description. So it wasn't really until about an hour before the live stream started that I really realized, like, oh, we're going to start doing this and it's going to send a notification to 400,000 people that we're live here at the Field Museum. And I haven't like written a script to introduce this event,
right?
I was just going to kind of wing it. So that's when I panicked a little bit. But then once we were live, it's like, you know, you're on. And, you know, I just have to kind of rely on, oh, I am an expert in communication. I have done this before. And so kind of reminding myself that I've actually been practicing this for a long time, and, you know, people have an expectation for what they're going to watch, and that expectation is that it'll be educational and entertaining. And so once I start going, I'm usually fine. It's just about the, you know, hour leading up to an event like that where I do have some more of those existential moments where I'm like, oh my God, someone from the Philippines is going to be watching this? Oh. So.
What if my glasses fall off and drop into the specimen, right?
Like, what? Yeah, well, the problem with, like, in the live stream, I accidentally cut myself. Like, I stabbed my finger with the scalpel, and I was trying to talk and still kind of, like, looking at this cut and thinking, well, you know, maybe it'll stop bleeding. But it was really kind of going there, and so I had to abandon the process for a few minutes and just kind of, like, left my colleague. Like, hey, Lauren, I'm just going to go. And then so I'm leaving the public space, and I forget to take my mic off. And the manager who runs the lab is like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I jabbed myself pretty bad. It's bleeding a lot. And then I realized that everybody tuning into the live stream could hear me say that. So, but, you know, a little bit of drama. I was so fine. Everything was fine.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because as you do this, your life becomes more and more public. You're more and more recognizable. The Forbes magazine profile raises, you know, your profile and influence a little bit more. How are you handling the transition of, you know, I'm not just a private citizen anymore. Everybody could be watching everything that you do and recognize you. You're recognizable.
Yeah, and I think if I dwell on it too much, I mean, that would stress anybody out. You know, I just noticed the other day, like, more people follow me on Twitter than live in the city I grew up in, right? And so that's kind of intimidating. But to be honest with you, you know, I feel very privileged that I've got such a supportive friend and family group that, you know, my sister's been visiting me for a couple of weeks. I'm going to go pick up my parents at the airport here in about an hour. And, you know, it's really nice to have the constant grounding forces in my life that are always there. So the internet can change and our viewership can change and it might grow. But at the end of the day, if I really need somebody to be honest with me and to give me some good feedback, I'll just call my sister, right? and so that's really nice because at the same time, they still tease me and give me a hard time because I'm the baby of the family. And so I get those reality checks when I need them. But the positive growth of the channel is something that I didn't expect, but I'm incredibly grateful for.
You've done so many different videos, you know, parasites and dissections and just really great natural science. And then you've also had a couple that have talked about women in science or challenging personal biases in science education. And those have done, really remarkably well also. Do you feel a sense of responsibility to every once in a while say, this is something we got to talk about, and now I have a platform, and I want to talk about this?
Yeah, I absolutely do, because this work doesn't happen in a vacuum. You know, I work with hundreds of scientists at my institution, and I help represent hundreds, if not thousands, of other scientists when we're collaborating on a video, whether it's, you know, because of a broader impact for a National Science Foundation grant or a cross-institutional collaboration, like when we worked at Denver. And, you know, I'm not immune to the conversations that kind of happen when the camera isn't rolling. So, you know, it took a nice dedicated friend group of online creators and I kind of talking for a couple of months where we realized, like, this online harassment thing, and especially harassment of women online, is getting out of control. And what I was noticing is actually our younger viewers reaching out to me and saying, you know, I really want to do what you do when I grow up, but I'm afraid to put myself out there because of what people will say to me on the internet, because I've seen what they've said to you. So what I do? And so you do feel a sense of responsibility. Like, it comes back to that, the all eyes on you sort of thing. Like, I have a platform and an opportunity to maybe not fix anything, but re-steer the boat, right? Create a new direction, a new positive direction. Because it's true, like, there are people watching, and especially young, influential people who are looking for role models in the media. And to be honest, when I do those videos, that's when I get the most personal and most gratifying feedback from people who really appreciate that, you know, someone went out on a limb and said what, in that case or in those instances, needed to be said. And at the same time, you know, we can't just create videos for the sake of, you know, sharing education without putting it into a greater context of, you know, some challenges that, that women or non-gender binary people or whatever feel in the sciences. And so I'm lucky that I work for an institution that is supportive in me kind of going outside of the box. But the feedback right. we get from people when we do is always overwhelmingly positive.
What's next for you? How do you keep sort of growing and taking risks and moving forward?
Oh, that's a great question. One that I think about a lot. So my goal is, you know, I've got this great job title, Chief Curiosity Correspondent, and I talk to a lot of people at a lot of universities and research institutions and museums, but also like cultural centers. And they're always asking me, well, how can we get someone like you at our institution? And really my onus is like, well, you've got to hire them. You know, you've got to go find the people and bring them on and give them the tools to help, you know, with your own digital communication strategy. And so my goal is that someday I'm not going to be the only Chief Curiosity Correspondent, that there will be other institutions that rethink the way that they engage with their audiences and the way that they talk about their research and their collections. And so my goal, I don't know how long it's going to take, probably the rest of my life. My goal is to work with other museums and help them foster the next generation of science communicators in this digital space and wherever else science communication is going to go in the next, you know, couple of decades.
Emily Grassley is the Chief Curiosity Correspondent with the Field Museum of Natural History in Chicago. She's from Rapid City. She was recently named to Forbes magazine's 30 Under 30 list. Congratulations on that honor. Emily, come back anytime you want to talk science with us. You're always welcome
Thank
on South
so
Dakota
much.
Public Radio.